Blog Talk Radio.
Lincoln 103, 5 Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding to 401 Parking Circuit, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, responding to gate 437, Bravo, for your dignitary detail. 3K 911, unattended 400 lower level, near Carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and around.
484 suspect, the female, Hispanic, 28 years of age, blue jeans, no further.
Control 5 Frank, 401 is around.
Good evening to you from a very cold, cold place, North Carolina. If you're in one of those places, gosh, I hope that you're staying warm. You're listening to the Private Officer Beat, brought to you by Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization. And, of course, also the Varney Insurance Group. Great group of folks. They've got the right insurance at the right price if you're a security contractor, private investigator, or alarm service. Check them out today on the web or give them a call. I'm sure that they'd love to hear from you. Hey, I want to get back just a moment about the cold weather. It really has been very, very frigid in many places. In fact, some places seeing wind chills and actual temperatures of below zero. And we're in one of those places. The North Carolina-Tennessee Mountains reached below zero overnight. Wind chills about 20 below, blowing snow. But more than the cold and more than the snow, many places have to be very concerned with something that's called black ice. And black ice is that area that you're going to think is probably just wet, but in all actuality, it was water that was on the road but has frozen as temperatures have dropped. And unfortunately, you're not going to realize it until you go to hit the brakes, and there you go. Spinning across the interstate and down into the embankment, and it's a mess, and it can be very dangerous. So if you think the road is wet, but the temperature is either below freezing or hovering around freezing, use extra care and caution because, trust me, it's probably going to be black ice. I'm Rick McCann, your host, founder and CEO of Private Officer International and Armor College, and we're just so happy to be back with you in a new year, and we've got a lot of new things to tell you about and to celebrate. And well, I know I'm a little behind the eight ball here, but let me wish you and yours a very happy, prosperous, and blessed new year, this 2014. And trust me, time, I don't know where time goes, but today is the sixth already, and we're spinning through this first month of 2014 like it was just a few hours, but we're a week almost into it. And it has been a very busy, busy week, as it was last year, a very busy year for POI and Armor College. And we are really gearing up for a busier year in 2014 than we were in 2013. We're going to tell you a lot about that tonight and over the next few weeks. We're very excited because also this year, coming up in a couple of weeks, we're actually celebrating our 10th anniversary. That's right, 10 years in business. Private Officer International has been around for 10 years. Many folks believe it's only been a few months or a year or two, a couple of years. But no, we've actually been in business for 10 years. Armory College was established in 2010, so I mean, time just flies. I don't know where it goes. I don't know what happens. It's true, the old saying, the older you get, the quicker time goes by, and that sure has been the case with me anyways. But we are celebrating 10 years, and it's been a great 10 years. We've learned a lot. We've been able to do a lot, and we have so much more to learn and a whole lot more to do in this new year, and we're certainly going to do it. Well, tonight in our radio program, in our training segment, we're going to talk about mobbed, and it's something that I've been wanting to talk about for several months, but we're going to be talking about a number of situations where you're in the middle of a flash mob or a takeover of a store or shopping mall or even a business. And basically, I want to talk a little bit about the mentality of the organizers and the participants, the safety issues, and how to respond and how not to respond. And as you have probably noticed over the Christmas holidays, there were a number of large 400 to 800 strong takeovers of theaters, shopping malls, and other businesses. We're going to talk a little bit about how to respond, how to stay safe, what to do and what not to do later on in this program. I also want to thank all those who participated in the Toys for Tots and Angel Tree Drive that we had during the month of November and December. And if you didn't, well, all I can say is shame on you. It was a collective, supportive event that our members participated in, and next year we hope to do even more. And each year we're going to ramp up all of the giving back. In fact, we have a brand new campaign that we're going to be kicking off February 1st, and it's called Pay Forward. Pay It Forward. And we've got a number of things that we're going to ask our members to help us do as we pay it forward. I believe that it's important to give back, but not only to give back, but to pay it forward and do it in advance, not wanting anything from it, not wanting any recognition, not wanting any payback. The Bible says, you know, he'll give it back to you in so many folds. And I don't care about giving it back in so many folds. I just care about doing it. And I believe that when you do it from the heart and you help people from the heart and you volunteer from the heart with no anticipation of anything being given back to you, that's the purest form of donating your time and your efforts that you can do. If you're always going to be one of these people always looking for what's in it for you, always looking for the payback, always looking for the rewards that's going to you're going to reap because of what you've done, then you're probably not going to benefit from it. It's always been my experience that when you least expect it, when you're not looking for it, that's when your blessings come. And so we're going to really work hard this year to pay it forward and to help folks, both members of POI as well as strangers, and we hope that you'll be part of that. We're very excited to be back on the air. We've been gone for a number of weeks during the Christmas and New Year's celebrating family and friends, and I hope that you had a chance to do so as well. But now we are in the new year, and we are ramping up to do a lot of things, and we want you, our many valued listeners, friends, members, to be involved. And I know that I've said this more than once, probably a couple hundred occasions, but we really do. We cannot do it without you. So we hope this year in 2014 you will definitely join in on some of the programs, some of the committees, and really help us to be a bigger, better organization and to really help folks, to reach out. And we'll tell you how to do that. But one of the best things you can do is join our committees. We have an awards committee. We have an officer down a benevolent service committee. We have a legislative committee. We have a training committee and a number of other committees. And if you'd like more information, all that you have to do is send an email to helpdesk@privateofficer.com. helpdesk@privateofficer.com. You can also email us while we're on the radio at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. And also, if you're listening on demand, tonight, tomorrow, 3 or 4 months from now. You can also send us an email at radioprivateofficer.com if you have any questions or comments. You want to submit news or other information, that is the place to do it, radio@privateofficer.com. You can also, at any time, day or night, contact our office because we have somebody available 24/7 at the help desk. Simply email them, helpdesk@privateofficer.com. You can also follow us on the web 24/7 as we're very big on the web, social media. We have a large footprint, as they say. And you can follow us on Twitter at Twitter/Private Officer, Facebook at PrivateOfficer.com. You can also follow us on Pinterest. And we also have our own forums, and all that you have to do is go to our main page there at PrivateOfficer.com and follow us or join our forums. And it's a great place. If you use it correctly and you participate and you're not just one of these folks who sit back and, you know, not get involved, if you get involved in our activities, our forums, our social media, you participate in the conversations and the training, you're going to find this a very valuable organization, and that the networking and the training that's free is also very valuable. It doesn't cost anything at all to join the forums or to follow us on Twitter or Facebook, which is where we broadcast all of our news and training and so forth. And we really encourage you to join and participate and be part of it, whether you're a member or not. The other thing, I haven't really spoke much about this in the last few months, but we're always looking for guests for the radio program. If you'd like to participate, you have a topic that you would like to talk about, you have a certain specialty that you'd like to engage us in, whether it be hazmat or use of force or less than lethal or something, you know, that has to do with security. Could be alarm, you know, electronic security, could be data security, could be loss prevention. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. And we will schedule you in an upcoming program. We have so much going on, and so much to tell you about. Actually, I feel like when you've been away from work for a couple of weeks on vacation, and all of a sudden you come back, and voila, you've got a whole desk full of work. You've got 300 emails. You've got, you know, another 100 voicemails to answer, and so much going on and so many people to talk to, and, you know, your head has to kind of spin around for a few days as you catch up. And that's kind of how it feels when you come back to the radio program after being gone for 2 or 3 weeks, and there's a lot of information to share, a lot of things to say. And so if I'm going 90 miles a minute, well, that's kind of why it is. And we'll try to slow it down here in the next segment. We're going to take a fast break in just a moment, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the 2013 Security Officer Death Report. There's been a couple of questions on it, and I'm really happy, proud, and excited to say that we had a much lower death rate of security officers than anticipated, and there's a number of reasons for that. We're not going to take any credit, but there is a number of reasons for that. And although that's a lot of good news to celebrate, on the other hand, there is some negative news that's associated with it, and we'll tell you about that as well. We're also going to talk a little bit about our security training summits. These are being scheduled throughout the country, and we're also going to be talking about the Strategic Training Partnership Program when we come back from the other side of the break. And then we're also going to talk about some other cool stuff. So definitely don't go away.
You're listening.
I was just going to the grocery store.
Seatbelt violators, beware.
I forgot to put it on.
If you're pulled over because you've broken the law.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
And you're not wearing your seatbelt.
It's broken, but I was going to have it fixed.
No matter what your excuse is, you will get a ticket in addition to the ticket for your original violation.
Click it or ticket? That's pretty easy to remember.
All right, you're listening to another live edition of the Private Officer Beat radio show right here on the POI Radio Network, and we're glad that you are. And even if you're listening later tonight or next week, we're still glad that you are listening. Just before the break, we told you a little bit about so many different topics that we have to cover with you tonight on this program, and there's a lot. I do want to get over here to the 2013 Security Officer Death Report. We had 73 confirmed security officer on-duty deaths and 80 estimated, but honestly, I think it's closer to probably 85 or 90. Now, some folks always ask every year, what do you mean by confirmed and why are you estimating? We can physically confirm in 2013, 73 security officers died because we've verified it ourselves. But many times we get information from third parties of a security officer death, and we're not able to verify it. There's no media report, no police press release, and short of calling every agency in that community, we just can't confirm it. We also know that because we're monitoring about 800 news sites and we get press releases and so forth, and we also get a lot of news from public information officers and individuals and so forth, other news sources, we know that we can't be on top of everything nationwide and worldwide, and we do monitor the security industry news in other countries as well. So that's a lot of news to cover, and we do have somebody trying to dig through it 24/7, but it is a lot of work. And I know that some of you have retweeted news from other news groups, and that's just a simple retweet. We actually dig through and mine the news that comes into us. We read over press releases and public information officer data that's sent to us from a number of agencies. So it's a lot of work, and it takes it's a long process. It takes all day, every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Anyways, with that being said, we know that we do miss some security officer deaths. Some just don't make the news, and some don't get reported at all, and some get misclassified. They call them doorman, or they call them, service officer, courtesy officer, and somehow they slip through the cracks and they don't get picked up and reported for what they are, security officers. But this year, we were able to compile the stats for 2013, and it kind of shook out like this. California is the deadliest state, and these states, these top five states, have been on the list over and over again. California, New York, and Florida are three states that are on the list every year, and they have been for the last 10 years that we've collected statistical data and put together the list. You know, it's just, I guess it really should go without saying, California and Florida and New York, they have some of the largest numbers of private security in their state. So obviously they're going to have the largest number of interactions, negative interactions with the public, assaults and on-duty deaths. Alabama also ranked there, and they're not there every year, but they are there frequently because a lot of security officers in Alabama carry firearms. They're not trained and they're not licensed for the most part. The most dangerous assignments, and I think this is what really confused some folks, and I addressed this to a couple of different security directors over the last few days. But the most dangerous security assignments is retail and loss prevention, followed by nightclubs, which includes bars and strip clubs and things of that nature. Residential communities, that's apartments, condominiums. We even include, short-term living facilities, things like that. Armored trucks follow that. And so a lot of folks want to know, how did the loss prevention and retail security get up there? Because, it doesn't seem right. And let me explain it to you this way. What we do is we look at a number of different areas and criteria, and armed confrontations and overall assaults in the security industry in 2013, loss prevention was at the top of the heap day after day, week after week when we looked at the statistics. So we look at the totality of the whole industry. Now, last year, 1.4 million arrests, detentions, and apprehensions were made by loss prevention, retail investigators, and mall security, according to our statistics and those of the Jack Hayes International Company, which is located in Florida, and they compile statistics for the loss prevention industry and put out a magazine. We also use data from public records. We monitor, like I said, about 800 news sources, and we also get information from law enforcement and various public information officers, and we look at what's going on in each segment of the security industry, whether it be hotel, residential, loss prevention. Anytime that law enforcement or private security entity is making that number of apprehensions or interactions with the public, 1.4 million, there's always going to be a higher propensity for violence, for assault, confrontations, and death. That's just how it works. If you work in a dangerous environment where you are handling explosives every day, there's going to be injuries and deaths associated with that type of work, much greater than a construction company who only uses dynamite, once every 6 months. We also take into account that loss prevention agents overall are untrained. They're not licensed. They do not have any formal defensive tactic training whatsoever. 99% of them are unarmed. They have no way to defend themselves or others in any type of attack. And even though that the retail security industry only averages about 2 or 3 death-related incidents every year, the number of assaults, confrontations, armed conflicts, they've been rising for years, but especially in the last couple of years. And in fact, they've jumped into double-digit increases. Last year, there was a 19% increase of confrontations and 14% increase of assaults for loss prevention. And studies also show that many of the shoplifters have criminal history. Some are wanted fugitives. Others are gang-affiliated, and still others are substance abusers. And the other thing that we have to look at is one of the reasons for the increase of the assaults and the armed confrontations more than ever before is that numerous states have actually lowered the dollar threshold, making thefts a felony rather than a misdemeanor. So in some states where the threshold between misdemeanor and felony was $500, they've changed it now to $200. Some states, a felony is $50. If you steal anything worth $50, it's a felony. And that really causes a problem in the way that these shoplifters think, because they know if they stole something worth $201 in their state, it's going to be a felony. Misdemeanors used to allow officers to just cite and release the offender, just give them a ticket and let them go as long as they had good identification right there at the store. But in the case of felonies, police officers cannot do that. They have to actually bring every single suspect into the jail, process them, fingerprint them, and each case, each individual, is required to post a bond, substantial bond, I might add. In some cases, it's in the thousands of dollars. Even though they only stole the $200 item, it became a felony. Also, many times people don't realize that when a shoplifter resists a loss prevention agent, in some states, that's an additional charge. It's a felony to resist a storekeeper or their agent in the process of a theft. And also, If any force is used, they assault the security officer in any way during the escape or attempted theft, that escalates that crime from shoplifting to robbery, even when there's no weapon, you know, used. Another mitigating factor in choosing loss prevention as the most dangerous was that organized retail crime laws have been passed in a number of states, and those states are aggressively pursuing those shoplifters, both law enforcement and prosecutors in states like New York, Michigan, Florida, Texas, Ohio, and others. Shoplifters know that they now have a higher probability of actually, you know, facing some serious county or state incarceration time, which escalates the likelihood that they're going to use force to flee if stopped by security. And that's really what it boils down to. The laws are toughening, but what that does in the on the backside of it, it actually causes that shoplifter to try to flee more often and to assault and use force to do so rather than face the increased harsh punishments. We're all for the increased punishment, and we're all for the increased level of law, increasing it to felonies, especially for organized retail crime, but you know, it's not a law enforcement officer making that arrest most of the time. It's an unarmed, untrained loss prevention agent or mall security officer. It's really not uncommon for us to hear of incidents involving handguns, knives, and other aggravated assaults involving loss prevention on a daily basis. And when I began in loss prevention, and I did it for 8 years with several large major retailers, both as a floor walker, a store detective, and as a district and regional manager, it was, you know, confrontations occasional. Now we read about confrontations happening every single day. So for that reason, and we also didn't even consider, although this really is part of it, that many incidents now involve law enforcement having to use force, law enforcement engaging in pursuits of shoplifters. There's been, just over the Christmas holiday, I know I read at least a dozen shoplifters killed in the U.S. trying to escape law enforcement and getting killed in wrecks. Law enforcement also getting involved in shootouts with these shoplifters. So, yeah, it's definitely the most dangerous. The other thing is when you're making $101.4 million detentions or arrests of shoplifters, it's just like stopping a motor vehicle, doing traffic stops. You don't know who you're approaching. You don't know what they've done, who they are, or what they have. You don't know if they're an escaped felon, a prisoner. You don't know what their mindset is. You don't know if they're on drugs. So here you have these unarmed, untrained security agents, for all intents and purposes, making, you know, full custodial arrest every single time they make a detention. It is an arrest. And so it's definitely not what it used to be, like most of security, and it's very, very dangerous. And that's why we put it there. All right, a couple of the things that we want to kind of highlight about this security officer death report, and I really encourage you to share this information with all of your staff, your personnel, your coworkers. Get the word out on Facebook, Twitter. Send it out, because people just don't realize, even security personnel, what's going on the job. Gunshots accounted again this year for the highest number of security officer deaths. 38 security officers were killed by gunshots. That was more than law enforcement. 5 stabbing deaths. 16 trauma deaths. That means they were either run over by a car, they were hit in the head, or they were assaulted physically. 10 had medical conditions, heart attacks. 3 were killed in motor vehicle accidents. There was 1 drowning during a hurricane in Alabama. And to break it down for you by state, New York had 7, South Carolina had 1, California had 11, Illinois had 4, Georgia had 1, Pennsylvania had 2, Texas had 4, Mississippi had 2, Delaware had 1, North Carolina had 2, Arizona had 3, Michigan had 3, Ohio 2, Virginia 1, Alabama 5, Massachusetts 2, Florida 6, Nevada 1, New Mexico 1, Tennessee 2, Kentucky 2, D.C. 1, Arkansas 1, Wisconsin 1, Indiana 1, West Virginia 2, Maryland 2, Louisiana 1, New Jersey 2. And we've since had information come into our office that there were actually a couple of others. We have still not been able to confirm that, but we're still working on it. I said that there's, it was really good to see under 100 killed this year because we had so many during 2012. But on the downside is we actually saw a 24% increase in armed confrontations in the last 2 years, including in 2013. No slowdown of armed confrontations in sight. Security officers have found themselves in dozens of gun battles in 2013, more than four dozen times. Security officers killed several dozen people. It sounds like you're in Mexico or some foreign country, but that's right here in the U.S. In the past 10 years of our operation, we have steadily seen armed confrontations increase, not just at the nightclub like many people think, but across the board, and it's going to continue to happen. Now, I did an interview yesterday with a TV station, and when I come back, I'll tell you what I shared with them.
It's for my wife.
My husband still doesn't know the real story about that dent in the van.
I've never told her that I used to be a lifeguard at a nude beach.
I've never told my kids about the time I was arrested for streaking.
My friends don't know that I still sleep with my teddy bear.
But they all do know one thing about me.
And that I'm an organ donor.
I'm an organ donor.
And that's one thing that's too important to keep a secret. Because I could save somebody's life. And how cool is that?
Listening to another edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network, brought to you by Private Officer International, a security and law enforcement organization, broadcasting today from Studio A. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another evening of informative, engaging, and exciting news and information from the Private Officer Organization.
All right, we are back live with you on the Private Officer Beat. Again, we want to encourage you to check out our friends over at OnGuardINS.com. OnGuardInsurance.com. Call them at area code 813-245-2675. Our friends over there are great folks to work with, and they've got the right insurance at the right price. I'm sure of it. If you have a private security agency, a PI company, or an alarm business, well, they can definitely help you out and give you the best insurance rates in the business. Check them out at OnGuardINS.com or give them a call at 813-245-2675. Talk with anyone over at the Varney Insurance Group, and I'll tell you, they've done okay by me, and I'm sure that they'll help you out just as well. We were talking, before we went to the break about the death report and the different states that saw a substantial number of security officers killed. And last night, I did a conference, video conference interview with a TV station in Jackson, Mississippi, and I explained to them really the reason why we're seeing the increase in security officer deaths and injuries and so forth. And that's really the bottom line is the interaction with the public. Interaction with the public between security and the general public at large continues to increase because security officers are being asked to enforce company policy, you know, enforce company rule, take care of civil, issues, and enforce criminal laws at the same time. But they're doing it without the proper training. When you consider that a law enforcement officer in most states, in order to be certified, they go through a 550-hour minimal standards of training. In some states, it's 800, and I know of a couple of states that actually it's 1,200 hours. That's a huge amount, even more training than you would get if you joined the military. But a security officer in most states, the medium training is 24 hours. Now, today I also had a conference call with a number of state representatives in Kentucky as we move forward to change the law there. And one of the examples I gave them was that in the state of Tennessee, in order to be a home inspector, those people inspect the homes before it goes to sale, you have to have 200 hours of classroom and field time working with someone else. 200 hours before you can be licensed or certified. Tennessee only requires that you have 8 hours, I believe it is, of unarmed security training. But in order to be a home inspector or, you know, somebody who's going to verify that the home is good for sale, you got to have 200 hours of training and working in the field before you get licensed. And there's a number of other industries that require substantial training with much less, you know, responsibility than a security officer has. And so that's the reason that we're seeing really a huge increase in security officer injuries and deaths. And we talk about this all the time. And we are seeing some changes, and I thank God for that. We are seeing changes. We've been able to change the law in a number of states. We're going to continue. Right now we're working on Kentucky and Connecticut and Georgia, and things are coming along. It takes a while. The old saying, the greasy wheel gets the grease. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And that's what we have to do. We have to keep speaking up and telling folks this is why we need to change the law. And, you know, with keeping the stats and the data like we do, we have it in black and white. We can show them. I do want to remind you that we do have the Security Training Summits happening in about 30 cities across the U.S. during 2014. We have a big one coming up in Lexington, Kentucky. At the university, we have another big one coming up at a university in Atlanta, Georgia. We have one coming up in Tampa and Orlando, Florida. We're going to be flying out to Denver in March, and we have one coming up in Reno, Nevada, and a number of other places. It's not too late. You can help sponsor it. Doesn't cost a lot of money, because what's happening is we're not charging any of the attendees, the students, the participants, a dime. We're going to be offering 2 days of fantastic training on workplace violence, use of force, active shooter, things of that nature, and it's all free. If you'd like to participate either as a sponsor or as a location to hold the Security Training Summit, please send us an email at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We also have been talking a lot about the strategic training partnership, and that's a little bit different than the summit, although it kind of does blend in together. The strategic training partnership, basically we're looking for security training schools, security agencies, or private colleges who have space to share, and we'll come in once a quarter or maybe every 2 months and put on various training. And the partner will share in that revenue, and it doesn't cost you anything at all, but you benefit greatly. If you want more information, we have a whole packet of information we can send out to you. Just contact us at helpdesk at privateofficer.com, helpdesk@privateofficer.com. We have a lot going on. Currently, we're revamping our website, so you'll be looking probably in about 3 weeks or so, maybe a month. You'll be looking at the website. All of a sudden, you'll be like, wow, this is different. This isn't what they had. We're going to have a lot more items there and a lot more great stuff to offer on the website. One of the great and cool things I'm really excited about is video training on demand. We'll be kicking that out in probably less than 6 weeks, where you'll be able to go in, pay a small fee, and watch a video training online. It'll be on demand, so there won't be any waiting. Once you register and pay for it, it'll be there. It's kind of like Netflix. We're very excited about that. We're going to be kicking off the video on demand training with about 10 different 30-minute to 60-minute training, and I think that it's going to be really a fantastic deal. And in fact, we'll be looking for instructors who have different topics that they would like to include. And again, it'll be a revenue share type situation. If you need more information, you know what to do. Contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Again, we got a lot to talk about, but tonight I want to move quickly over to our training segment. We want to talk about being mobbed. You know, you hear a lot in the media these days about flash mobs, about people going into stores and malls and different places and just taking over the place. And it happens more than you think. Some of it makes the news headlines. Some of it does not. There are two types of mobs or flash mobs. There are those that are good-spirited. They have good causes, and they just want to get their message out, like a church or a singing group or dance group. And then there's the criminal element that have nothing but bad intentions. Everything that they're about is criminal. They are there to cause chaos, to steal, to rob, to assault. And actually, some flash mobs are riots. And to be honest with you, flash mobs are the same. They serve the same purpose as a bomb threat. And that purpose is to disrupt normal business, to cause alarm, to get a panic response, to cause chaos, to hurt the revenue of the businesses involved, and to address their own agenda. And they don't care about who gets hurt, and they don't care about what stores don't make any money during that time frame. They don't care. And so to that mentality, it's the same as somebody calling in a bomb threat or causing a riot.
An ugly Christmas outside of a Florida movie theater, a brawl erupting involving more than 600 people in Jacksonville, with reports of shots being fired. Police say it started when teenagers tried to enter that theater without paying.
Now, these are happening across the country. Just during Christmas, there were six or seven of them.
Flash robbery, 300 teenagers creating a crazy scene inside a Northside Walmart. When it was all over, more than $1,500 worth of merchandise had been stolen.
Well, Channel 4's Emily Turner spoke with our crime analyst about how dangerous these situations can really be. Emily?
You know, Rob, in their minds, they probably just thought they were throwing food around the store, having a good time. But what they were really doing, our crime analyst says, is throwing around the threat of a very dicey situation.
It starts off looking like a mob scene, but quickly, this crowd at the Walmart on Lem Turner Road organizes into what people call a flash mob. Channel 4's crime analyst Ken Jefferson, though, calls it a flash robbery.
You're talking about a very chaotic situation, plus a very dangerous situation, in as much as you've got hundreds of young people that's wreaking havoc all over this store.
It's hard to see, but these young men and women are having a food fight just inside the doors of the store. According to the police report, the teens seen in this video stole more than $1,500 worth of merchandise to throw at each other. You can see one person here grab a bag of bread. The police report says more than 300 people were involved. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office believes the group was at a party on Sampson Road earlier Saturday night, and when that was broken up, they headed to the Walmart. Jefferson says the teens may think something like this is fun, but it's actually a serious safety risk. So many people so riled up could create a panic. Fortunately, no one was hurt as far as we know, but Jefferson says these teens could still be charged if police find out who they are. And with the help of their own YouTube video, Jefferson says he hopes that happens.
So you've got a large number of people going and coming at the same time. They're throwing produce, they're stealing items, they're all over the stores. You can imagine how frightful and fearful the customers were that were in there at that particular time.
At this point, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office doesn't have anyone behind bars for this crime. According to the police report, on the way out, you saw that mass exodus of people leaving the Walmart. The security cameras were damaged. They also believe, the Sheriff's Office says, that these kids were all under the age of 18. Now, if you have any information, you're asked to call Crime Stoppers, and that number is 1-866-845-TIPS. Reporting live, Emily Turner, Channel 4, the local station.
Yep. Well, there you have it. I don't understand.
Craziness, craziness, craziness. It happens over and over again. And you know, the thing that we want to stress is that, as the officer said in that piece, it may seem harmless. It may seem like they're just trying to have fun, kids being kids, whatever. The truth of the matter is, when you pre-plan an attack, when you send out hundreds of mass messages through social media, when your intent is to cause destruction, chaos, mayhem, theft, that is not fun. It's not with good intention. It's not something that we can say, oh, they were just kids being kids. You, at that point, have committed serious crimes, and it rises to the level of a riot, no different than if a bunch of folks decided to turn over cars and smash out windows and destroy property because they didn't like what happened. They didn't like how a trial went. They didn't like what the mayor or the governor said. They didn't like whatever. And we've seen this, you know, repeatedly for a number of reasons. When you have folks with that mentality in a large number, whether they're armed or unarmed, what you have is a very dangerous situation. Not only is it dangerous from the aspect of the perpetrator, but it's dangerous because the customers that are in the store, the theater, they panic. They get upset. They don't know what's happening. They don't know if these people have guns. So many active shooter situations out there today, certainly if you were in the middle of that type of atmosphere, the only thing that would be on your mind is, let me get the heck out of here. Let me go. Let me escape before I get hurt. Causing any level of alarm, concern, or fright is a riot when multiple people get together to do this type of mayhem. Now, can you imagine being the lone wolf, or you and another buddy being the security officers at a store, a mall, or a theater? Over the Christmas holidays, there were about a half a dozen, one after the other, New York, Florida, Virginia. It was just like everywhere. In one situation at a theater in Jacksonville, 600 to 800 people took over the theater. They stormed the place. Security would not allow them in, so they called reinforcements. And people began storming that shopping mall, that theater where the mall was, and Jacksonville police and other agencies had to come in. A number of arrests were made, but they were able to clean it out in a few hours. We've seen this happen time and time again. So you and a buddy are there in the mall or the store or the theater. What do you do? What do you do? First of all, should you stand around and decide that this is a good intent, flash mob, or bad intent? Are they there just to sing lullabies? Are they there just to sing, you know, hymnals? Are they there just to show their dance moves? Or are they truly there for criminal intent? Well, first of all, during these type of situations, we really don't have a lot of time to decipher their intent. We can't read minds. It's not our job to read minds. It is our job to enforce the rules and the laws. And if they have come without permission of the store management, the mall management, the theater management, with the intent to disrupt business, with the intent to disrupt and cause chaos, then it doesn't matter if they are there to dance. It's not there, you know, it doesn't matter if they are there to sing or if they are there to steal. Overall, we have to treat them the same. They are there disorderly, trespassing, and we need a plan of attack. So what is our plan? What should we do in any of these events? Number one, don't try to read their mind and try to decide what their intent is, good or bad. Treat them all the same on the same level, because even with a good intent flash mob or group, they could easily cause people to panic, people to get hurt, even a stampede. And, you know, we saw last year where during one of these flash mobs, a citizen got involved and he pulled his weapon out. This was in Florida, and they took the weapon away from him, and he could have been killed. So immediately don't try to read their minds, but instead, step number one, I've heard security directors say, well, let's go over and talk with them and see if we can reason. That's not your first step, because if you only have two, three, four security officers and there's 600 of them, you're outnumbered. And what's going to happen when you go to address a situation or try to reason with them or try to trespass them is you're only going to rile up and stir up the crowd and those around. So the number one step that you need to take is call 911. But when you do call 911, be very clear and concise as to what is going on. You have a large crowd. They are disorderly. It may be a flash crowd, a flash mob. They're not leaving. They're causing chaos. This way, the dispatcher knows that when they dispatch the units to come and assist you, that they dispatch a large number of them. I know that initially in the Jacksonville incident last month, it came out, you know, like there was just, you know, a couple of dozen people, and they dispatched like two units or three units, and it turned out there were 600 or 400 at that time, and it kept on building. And at that stage, it is a riot. So make sure that you do clearly and concisely give that information to the dispatcher that there's a large number, and the dispatcher is going to ask, are they armed? And your response should always be, I don't know. We haven't gotten that far yet. I don't know, because that's the truth. You don't know. You haven't frisked every single person involved in that mob. Notify all the officers on your team and your supervisor what's happening. Do not enter that zone alone. Consider that an unsafe zone. You need to monitor it from outside of the zone, whether that be on the second level, whether that be from a block away, whatever it is. Because if you approach it alone or even with two officers, you're only going to intensify the situation. You're only going to increase instead of decrease what's going on. Plan an attack before you go in. I always recommend in these situations, whether it's dancers or singers or rioters, that you wait till police get there. Monitor it from a safe distance. Call that your safe zone, and don't go beyond your safe zone. Wait for the cavalry. We always tell you, wait for the cavalry, because if you try to clear them out by yourself, many of the bystanders especially if they're enjoying the music, the dancing, they're going to get involved. They're going to start calling you out. They're going to start saying, oh, leave them alone, leave them alone, leave them. Officer safety is number one. So make sure your plan of attack is to wait for law enforcement. You're going to give them some verbal commands to cease and to leave the property. Without that, they technically are not trespassing on your property. So once you've given them a verbal command, if they remain on the property at that point, they are trespassing. Now, up until then, you might have had a disorderly conduct, but again, depending on what it was they were doing, you know, it might not have been a crime at all. But once you give them the command to leave the property and they do not, they are then trespassing, which is an arrestable offense. I also recommend that you use video, record everything that's happening for civil and criminal documentation and possible prosecution. Make sure that when, you know, you're doing these things with law enforcement, that you're collecting as much evidence as possible. And if you make any arrest, make sure that you get that well documented. Definitely you want to write those incident reports, get witness statements, and so on and so forth. Now, very quickly, what level of force are you going to use? If you are going to ask them to leave and you're going to help escort them out of the mall, then you cannot use any force because no crime has taken place at all. Now, if they are trespassed and they refuse to leave, again, force application will be very minimal because of the type of crime that's been committed. You don't want to escalate the force, especially if there's passive resistance, if they're only not complying. If there's passive resistance, you can't use any force at all. If there's verbal abuse, refusal, that's called passive, and no force can be used because it would be against the law. You'd be assaulting them. You cannot use force to help them along off the property. Many nightclub bouncers do that, and that is an assault. Again, my recommendation is that you wait for police to arrive. You help them to quell the disturbance. You make arrest if necessary, but don't try to go it alone. Don't be the lone, you know, gunman in the thing. Don't be, the lone ranger. You want to be waiting for backup. Stay in the safe zone. Document, document, document. If some of them make a, you know, they commit a crime, they steal, take their pictures with your cell phone and while police are coming. Videotape them like they videotape themselves and use that evidence to make arrest. It is a very serious and a very dangerous situation when you have flash mobs, when you have people that come in large quantities to take over a place. You don't know their true intent. You don't know if they're armed. You don't know if they're high, intoxicated, and it's really a very dangerous situation. So, again, officer safety first, everything else second. Thank you for being with us tonight on this first edition, the first program of the 2014 season, and, you know, there'll be many more. We have a lot going on. We really encourage you to become a member of Private Officer International if you are not already. And, of course, as always, if you need any information, contact us at helpdesk@privateofficer.com. Be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you back here on the radio on the POI Network.